Hello and welcome to Clear the Air with me, Jess.
And me, Kaylee. Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee will be available on all platforms where you listen to your podcast. The podcast is there to discuss all things personal, mindset, political, female, and a mass of food sharing. So make sure to tune in to us every Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Sorry, I just started it, so we could be starting.
It's good you remembered. I talk a lot about survival psychology because a lot of our thinking is survival orientated, and imposter syndrome is an example of that, because that's really, you know, putting yourself in a situation where you think you're going to be vulnerable, you're not skilled enough, you'll be found out. So a lot of our thing, you know, we're funny species really, because we're very complicated, but we can be really simple as well. And a lot of our, I mean, we're all going around thinking all the time, aren't we? It's just that a lot of it isn't very helpful. That's what I've found out over the years. And I'm sure you both have had your challenges with that as well.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to come straight in. So Tony Brooks, aka the leadership psychologist, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Clear the Air today. We're really excited to speak to you about so many things. We've just had a tiny little catch up before we started recording, and there's so many things you want to delve into. We think mindset is the key to changing your life, which it is. You know, I me and Kaylee always talk about it, and how things have, for me certainly, when I changed little tiny things in my mind, my life began to change in drastic ways. And I think for us at Let's Clear the Air, that's what we want to help other people do all the time, just by going through all the bits and pieces of our brain, because it's very, very complex. So Tony, welcome.
Hey, welcome. It's really really great to be with you both.
So let's jump in. So first of all, you're known as the leadership psychologist, but we want to kind of talk about, we were just touching on it a moment ago, about imposter syndrome and this survival thinking that we kind of do. And I definitely know I do this. There's times when I'm going on a bit of a spiral, the imposter syndrome kicks in, all these other thoughts that people are out to get me kick in, and then I'm like, I don't trust anyone. I'm like, whoa, let's just take a break, Jess. And let's delve into that and your experiences with it and what you talk to your clients about, because, yeah, it's a real, real interesting topic.
Yeah, I mean, just firstly, Jess, I mean, I work a lot with owners of businesses, leaders in businesses, that kind of thing. But to be honest, it's about life in general, isn't it? But I always say to business leaders that their biggest challenge is their thinking. And I think that's just a thing in life generally. And so, I mean, I've had my own business for 15 years, but I've studied psychology, and I've got more and more fascinated in the fact that we do, our survival instinct can kick in a lot and hijack us and exaggerate problems, imagine problems. And I've got to be honest, I don't really like the term imposter syndrome. I don't like the fact that people go around labeling themselves with it. I mean, the term's been around for years, but it's grown in prominence a lot the last couple of years. But it's actually part of the human condition to look for potential threats. And 2 million years ago, you know, the origins of our species, we'd be in the Sahara Desert worried about saber-toothed tigers and being attacked. But in modern day life, it's different. But we're still, you know, scanning the horizon and looking out to see what potential threats are out there. And a lot of the time then they can go inwards, and it's about protecting our ego and our self-esteem. So we're put in situations, I don't know, you're invited. I'm sure when you started your careers, you were given some amazing opportunities, but it exposes you a little bit. You think, I mean, here's the thing. For me, I think the biggest challenge, the human condition, is the fact that most of us don't feel good enough. And that can be a husband, wife, father, daughter, you know, business person, speaker, film producer, actress, whatever it is, you know. And I think the human condition is driven very much that way, because we're constantly looking for threats and danger, and we're very fear-based. A lot of our thinking is quite fear-based. So then that can turn inwards, because you can think, where am I not good enough? Where am I not strong enough? And I think, to be honest, it's a great tragedy, really. I think that for me, we'll get into this a lot, no doubt, in the talk, but for me, I think coming at life from a place of feeling that you're a good person, that you are good enough, but you want to improve and you want to grow and you want to get better at whatever you do. But I think a lot of the time we come from a place of just not feeling good enough and looking at the other people and the competition and constantly looking at where we're not good enough. And I think it's a great shame, really.
I think as well, do you think there's an element of exposure that's harmed this in a way? Like when I think, weirdly enough, I found my diaries a couple of days ago from when I was like 11 and I didn't have any sort of like technology or anything. And I felt like in those diaries I have more self-esteem than I have now. Like it was really strange watching it. I just had like a TV and I had like an iPod and I wasn't aware of what everyone else was doing. It was like the summer holidays. I wasn't even aware of what people at school were doing over the holidays. So it's like I didn't have that, I don't want to say competition, but awareness. Whereas now, if I'm not working or say I have a day off, I can sit on the sofa, have a look for Instagram, see that someone else is shooting something or they've just said they've had three great meetings. And I'm like, oh, I should be hopping on meetings right now. What am I doing? And I can have had a great night the night before or a great day work-wise. And then I see that and I go, oh, I'm not good enough. This isn't, but it's that exposure because now we can see what people are doing nationwide, worldwide, and feel in a way, not that necessarily we all feel that way, but like you're in constant competition or on like a hamster wheel that's going, going, going. You know?
Totally get that. And I guess the rise in social media, I can only imagine what it must be like for you both, and you in particular, Jess. I think you've got a huge following on social media. And then again, that human tendency to keep looking over your shoulder, looking at what other people have got. And it's a real great shame actually that we tend to look upwards, don't we? We look at somebody who's got a better house, a better car, in a better place in their profession or whatever you, rather than I think we all know this instinctively. We should be appreciating and be more grateful for what we've got, what we have, and know there's a hell of a lot of people worse off than us. This is a problem, with the ego, and that's what you're talking about quite a lot there, Kaylee, when that comparison thing comes in. Our ego will never be satisfied because you'll get to a point, you could both get to the pinnacle of your career, but then you'll see somebody else who's slightly, higher, or you think has, got a better reputation, and your ego will never be satisfied. And I think that it depends on how you want to come at life from. So I think some people like to come at life from the place of ego never being satisfied, constantly driven, wanting to prove themselves. But I think that's a great shame, because I think for those people, they'll probably never get to a place where they feel happy, contented with themselves. I think, I know it's quite, I put something on LinkedIn today and I don't know how it's going to go down, but I put a quote about the fact that if you can't look in the mirror and say you love yourself, that's your biggest goal. And on a business social media platform, I'm not quite sure how it's going to resonate with people. But that, to be honest, that's been my biggest challenge, I would say, the last 8 or 9 years since I've had a couple of diagnoses of depression, but I was diagnosed with depression in 2013. And I think my biggest journey has been to grow to love myself. And I think that should be the goal of everybody. I think if you can come at life not thinking you're perfect and that you can't grow and improve, but to actually just really like yourself, for me, love yourself really. And I think it is, for me, it's a great tragedy that for a lot of us, we're not at that place and we're constantly looking at other people and then just thinking, well, I'm not that. I haven't got that. I think it's, and obviously, as you say, Kaylee, the exposure to social media now just makes that even more challenging, really.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about loving yourself is so, so important, because my troubles, obviously, I suffered with depression for a long time, a period of my life, and it wasn't until I started to do things just to make sure I was giving myself what I was always giving others. I would always give everything from an empty pot. I was a people pleaser to extreme level because of childhood traumas. And it wasn't until I thought you deserve to have that for yourself that things started to change. Like, even to the point where I'd make sure everyone ate, everyone did their things, everyone moisturized, and I'd just jump into bed and that'd be it. I'd probably be hungry. I wouldn't care about myself on any level. And it was like a big onion for me. There were so many different traumas that I'd gone through that I had to unpick, because what you don't realize, what I came to realize, was that each time you unpick a layer of something, it stems back to another, a trauma that had happened previously in my life. So you peel that one, but then it opens up another one, because all these things lead to all these different things. And it's like I was talking to my friend yesterday, I went for a long walk through the woods, and the idea of the butterfly effect I find incredible. So something that happened to us as a kid will be affecting us in our adult lives. And that may be the reason why we don't have self-love. You know, if our parent were a bit neglectful, we'd have lack of self-love. And it's all these tiny things that we have to get to the crux of. And I think as soon as you're aware of something, you can fix it. And that's why I'm writing my second book at the moment. And the first chapter is awareness, because I feel without that, you can't fix anything because you don't know what you don't know. And so awareness to the fact that you're not loving yourself in a certain manner is a great place to start. Like you said, with depression, it's you find in that you're not loving yourself, and you can do tiny little things a day that will create a butterfly effect to the longer run of you actually liking who you are. I find that when you're kind of pushing for something all the time, like I was talking recently with Kaylee about goals and purpose, and I solely had my purpose on my goal of being an actress, and I didn't care about anything else. So I was missing so many joys of life. And I've written this in my book as well, that I think goals and purpose shouldn't be put together. Goals should be separated, and purpose and joy should be married together. So anything that you find joy from should be our purpose, whether that be helping others, whether that be writing. It shouldn't just solely be on your goal, because I think you give yourself such blinkers to the rest of life. And, you know, if I'm only acting for 10% of my time on earth, I've got 90% that I haven't enjoyed because I've been solely based on this goal and not finding any joy or purpose in anything else. And I find that concept very interesting. What do you think about joy and purpose and goals?
Oh, love it. Yeah, let me just pick up on a couple of things you said there, Jess. I think I'll start with the purpose one straight off, actually. When I talk to business owners, business leaders, we talk about purpose, and we'll get straight into, you know, I don't know, they want to, you know, have a six-figure business, or a, you know, multi-million business, or whatever it might be. And I often pause and say, but what's your personal purpose in life? Because for me, to be honest, a massive driving thing for me is my wife and my daughter. You know, it's, you know, doing everything I can to make them happy, have good, you know, quality time with them, all of those kind of things. And I often say to leaders as well, I'll ask them to score themselves on success, fulfillment and happiness. Because in business, I think in life generally, you can get really wrapped up in success at the neglect of fulfillment. Are you really enjoying what you do? Does it feel like you have a purpose? Does it have a meaning for you? Because you can get so wrapped up in success and results, you lose sight of the other two. So I'm totally with you there. And I think you used the word awareness, Jess. To be honest, you know, when people say a book changed your life and you think, oh yeah, it didn't really, did it? But I read Eckhart Tolle's book, New Earth. His famous one is Power and Now, but I read New Earth in 2013. 2013 was a big year for me. And one of the key things in that, one of the biggest things I've taken away, is that as a species, we're the only species that can actually sit at a level of awareness above our own thinking. It's believed that animals don't have consciousness in the same way. But I think that's amazing, because we're thinking all the time. And allegedly, I think this is crazy, but we allegedly have about 40 to 50,000 thoughts a day. But we're thinking beings, we're thinking all the time, often a lot of it not productive. But if you can pause for a moment and go, hang on a minute, where's this thinking going? Because often we just go, we follow it. But the very moment you start to sit above your thinking and start to be more aware, that word, Jess, the more power you have over it. Because straight away you've lessened the power of it. But just by actually taking that moment to appreciate, hang on, where's my thinking going here? And trying to understand why it's happening. And for me, so often do I feel threatened here in some ways? You know, what's going on with this, you know? And it's actually almost having I know it sounds a bit slightly crazy, but having conversations with yourself and having better conversations with yourself and being a better coach for yourself as well is really fundamental. And I know you've had a really tough history, Jess. Apologies, Kelly. I don't know quite so much about your history. But
blasted mine all over the internet, that's why. All over talk shows.
yeah. But I guess the danger is sometimes, and you're right, from understanding, again, gives you the power to do something about it. But you know, that great Freudian analogy of going to sit on the analyst's couch and talking about your problems, but never really getting it anywhere with them. I guess that can be the danger sometimes, is that we can get a little bit too, I'm not saying you have for a moment, just any general comment, we can get too fixated with our past and our problems rather than looking at where we are now and our future and what we are capable of being, because there's a lot more choice that we have available to us, choice in the way we think, choice in the way we see the world, choice in what we do. And I think sometimes we can feel a victim, you know, victim of circumstances, or the world's acting on us, but we can actually make better choices, just starting off by better choices about the way we think. And I think that's so fundamental to us all, really, that often people don't think they have that choice, and they do.
Yeah, I think the victim mode thing was a big one for me, because I did sit in that, and that's another, I think that's the second chapter of my new book, is victim mode, because I sat in that, I thought, life's handing me some crappy cards, this is just it, and life sucks, and I'm just going to tell everyone how bad it is. And then it wasn't until I kind of took a step back and was like, well, actually, life's not bad, you just had some bad things happen. And I had to completely like get rid of my victim mode. And, you know, I found a lot of the time people enable victim mode, because, oh, you've had a tough time, Jess, you're allowed to go and have a drink. So I'll be like, oh, okay, I'll get pissed again this week, and that will be that. And then I'll just write off another week because I've got a hangover or something, you know. And that was kind of this spiral. But you've got to take responsibility for your life. And it wasn't until I learned to do that, that things really changed around. So it's that victim mindset, I think, is so detrimental to us, because no matter what's happened, no matter whose fault it was, it's always your responsibility. Your life is your responsibility. And I think taking that ownership gives you that chance to change those thoughts and change the process, which ultimately, I think when I first started on this journey of trying to understand myself and understand what was going on and change my world around, I got so fixated on, you know, well, how do I do it? Well, but this is going wrong, but this is going wrong. And it wasn't until I did the little things and just carried on that you realize it's your thoughts that change everything around you. Like, you, someone could call you a name, and we're told, you know, that's a swear word, so they're being bad to you. Or you can choose the meaning of whatever comes into your life. That's what I'm trying to get at. So whatever someone says to you, you get to change and choose what meaning that has to you. And I think, you know, we all get offended by someone, whereas instead, sometimes we could turn it around and say, actually, they're having a bad day, this is nothing to do with me. Suddenly it's taken off of you and you're no longer offended. There's so many different ways to frame things. And I think that was a big change process for me, is reframing things. Not everything everyone does is trying to victimize you. Not everything everyone trying to do is trying to hurt you. Could just be their own things that they're having a bad day. And it's just choosing what works and makes you a happier person. And then you create your own reality.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, just a couple of points around what you were speaking about there. I think the big elephant in the room is that we think sometimes that we're the only person thinking in a, you know, particular negative way or whatever. You know, when Kaylee started Raspberry Films in 2018 or whatever, was it 2018 you started?
19,
sorry. So when you started that, though, you probably had a load of doubts in your mind about were you capable of doing all this kind of things. And you probably think, well, everybody else is in the film industry, they don't have those, you know, kind of feelings, thoughts, experiences, but they no doubt, you know, I think that's the big elephant in the room. We're all thinking all the time, and almost everybody, in, you know, that's where this whole, that's what frustrates me with the imposter syndrome, because it's part of the human condition. Everyone has moments where they don't feel good enough, or they feel, you know, challenged with their thinking. And I think the great thing actually is just to accept we're all like that, and then we can be a bit more understanding. And I think sometimes it's appreciating, like you touched on there, Jess, when somebody is saying something derogatory about you, to you, whatever it might be, then you just think that's probably saying a lot more about you than it is about me. And and I think that's a sort of powerful place to come from, because you can go, you know, can stand back from that. And I think one of the dangers is we seek external validation a lot. I talk about this quite a lot in my work, you know, go within for your validation more. Don't look at it. You can't guarantee it from other people, can you? But and I know, obviously, you know, if you're creating a movie or a TV program, then the critics' reviews are going to matter. They are going to matter. You know, I appreciate that. But I think in a lot of situations, go within for validation more within yourself. Trust yourself a little bit more and don't be destabilized so much by what other people say, whether it be good or bad, actually. You know, it's trusting yourself more, trusting the quality of you and your intentions and what you are looking to do, because we can get really wrapped up in other people's opinions, can't we?
Yeah, I think I was just going to touch on, because you've both talked, so a lot of my, so kind of my background is kind of anxiety within family, but my own issues is mainly around eating. So I think there's a level of mindset and awareness. And then, so I've suffered from, like, since I started quite young, like when I was like 5, with issues around food. And I think the hard thing as well is that it's physical as well as mental. So even now, whether it's good, whether it is something to do with validation or whether it's actually good news career-wise, is that I'll still seek those things. So whether that's binging. So a lot of the time, even if it's not necessarily negative, if I do or accomplish something well, to me, I should reward myself by eating a 1 kilogram bar of dairy milk. And then with that comes feeling sick, wanting to puke, like, you know, feeling disgusting about yourself, therefore going from a big high, bringing yourself down to a big low, and vice versa in terms of, you know, deciding not to eat or things like that. But it's hard as well when you have that mindset and you have that awareness of what your brain's doing, but yet physically you still have that urge to do it. It's very difficult to have those steps to stop yourself from making that happen. And there's still times I do it now, I can't say I don't. There's times that I think you fall into patterns, because that's the thing, is when you've been through things, or they don't necessarily always go away, whether that's you're dealing with anxiety or you're dealing with something you've had for 20 years, you put in those steps and you can have really good days, but sometimes that mindset will be there, and it's kind of a constant battle, you know?
Yeah, and actually, I think being kind to ourselves more, really, then, Kaylee, you know, it's appreciating that, okay, I'm having a bad day, and don't make it worse by being sort of thinking, I shouldn't be thinking like this, and I shouldn't be in a state of mind, because we do, we have our ups and downs, and I think being a lot kinder to ourselves when we're going through that. I mean, I'm not in any way, shape, or form an expert on sort of food issues, but I guess to a degree, we go to food, we go to certain things from a place of either, I guess, security or to distract us from things as well. And then sometimes it is what's really going on here. But food's obviously a big security thing, you know. It's we need food to survive. And sometimes we get a little bit misguided in terms of our thinking around food.
We use it as emotions.
But I don't want to go there too much, because I'm an expert in food issues, but I think it is that security piece. But I think that's the important thing. I think we all have our vices or our things, you know, and that can sometimes we just have a little bit of a slip up, and and I think it's really important for us to be a lot kinder to ourselves rather than start, you know, being really hard on ourselves in situations like that, and just say, okay, I had a bad day, you know, and it's, but I'm back on it again now. It's just the way it is, you know.
Can I ask you, would you mind telling us a little bit about, like, why you went into psychology and kind of your journey?
Yeah. Okay. So I started studying psychology, I think probably in the 90s. I did an A-level at night school, and then I did a degree through the Open University in the early 2000s, I think. So I guess my interest was there. I mean, I'm interested in people. I'm interested in what makes me tick and what makes other people tick. And then 2007, I went through a divorce, started my own business, diagnosed with depression. Always had a pretty good year, 2007. And I guess the fascination then was even greater. In all honesty, from a selfish point of view at first, I guess, to understand my own mind better. And had a bumpy journey. To, I say, 2013, I was diagnosed with depression, which was the last time. And I feel in a much better place now, that I don't think I'll ever go back there, because I think I've got greater power and understanding about what's going on. And I think for me, here's the thing. I think the problem is that people can, you know, when we talk about mental health, I know you two are great advocates of well-being and mental health issues. I think sometimes, though, mental health, people can either think I'm mentally healthy or I'm not. It's black and white. But for me, I'd like to talk mind health because it's on a spectrum. We're moving all the time. You know, in a particular day, you're both have experiences. You can get up, feel full of the joys of spring, and a couple of things happen and you hit the floor. And we all move around on that. And I think that for me, it's accentuating the more positive things we can do. So there's things I do, like I journal very often. I write down 5 good things about the day. I've done that since 2013, I think. And then dealing with noticing when you're going into darker territory and more difficult territory, and having some tactics. You know, Jess, you talked about reframing, but having some tools and strategies that can help you move out of that. So that's going off at a tangent there, but for me, the fascinating with psychology, it's fundamental, isn't it? It's how good an actress you'll be, how good a film producer you'll be. A lot of it will fundamentally be down to your I know you've got to develop skills, but fundamentally it's about how you think and how you relate to yourself and relate to people and relate to life, really. So it's just a fascinating area. It's no doubt why you both have started this podcast as well. It's just that fascination. Whatever aspect of life we're involved in, we're human beings, and we are we can be complex, we can be simple sometimes. But that the thinking part of it is just fundamental. You know, it's fundamental. Yeah.
I read a book about the monkey mind, you know, from thought to thought to thought. And when I read that, and I was like, oh my god, that's exactly what I'm doing. You can kind of stop it. And I use meditation a lot as a tool, and I talk about often you having tools like you just said. And it's about, I always use this metaphor because it just worked well for my mind, but it's about being on your surfboard so that when the big wave comes, you've got your life jacket on rather than just sinking when you fall off. So my tools would be like, I do ice showers, I do meditation, I'll do all these little tools, and breathing, Wim Hof breathing, because they keep me a bit balanced. And I like to walk through nature because that just kind of grounds me. And I think when you realize that, I always thought, and I don't know if you thought this as well, Kaylee, like happiness is something you reach and then you're suddenly there and then, oh, I'm happy now. That life's great. It wasn't until I worked out life isn't like just an uphill thing. It's up, down, all around, down, forward, backwards, everywhere.
In a day sometimes.
All in one day. And it's about holding on to these little tools to make you be able to move through this. And I think the moment I took acknowledgement that life is never linear, that it's always going to be up and down, just how you get through each day, whether you have a joyful day or whether you have a depressed day or a down day, it's about knowing that something better is always coming and having that hope, but without missing the joy that you've got in the moment. And I think that was always quite nice to hold on to when I realized, okay, it's not just one place you get to and then life is fabulous from then on. It's about understanding the hurdles. And in fact, I find a lot of purpose from going through the hurdles. I find a bit of joy in that. So I'm like, wow, give myself a pat on the back, you got through that today. And then you can use that. And that's what we do in the podcast, is then, well, we had this hurdle, this is what we did, hope it helps someone. And there's a whole other purpose just from trying to find purpose. So it's kind of, it all links in.
Yeah. And I think, you touched on the about resilience there. And I know that's a big thing for you as well. Here's the thing, for resilience is not really how you react to situations. Resilience is the work you've done beforehand for me. And I think, I use the concept life buoys and sharks, because I think that in life, the more life buoys we can create around ourselves, which we is strategies, approaches to keep ourselves in a good place, and deal with the sharks that can take us down. You know, so for example, with me, if I spend too much time on the news, that's a shark for me that can affect my mood. So from about March, I had about 2 or 3 months off the news. I didn't go on that, you know, my apps on my phone, didn't watch it. I just wanted a break from it because it's a hell of a lot going on in the world. And I pick things up generally, certain things take you down, and it's good to avoid those. And then you know that certain things lift you, and it's good to do more of those. And I think as well, we lose sight of the fact that our brain is an organ, and the brain needs exercise. It needs good nutrition. You know, my daughter, again, she and I often talk about when she's doing fitness work, her psychological state is typically a lot better in an emotional state as well. So exercise is really important, I think, because I think it gives us that greater fact. You know, we're feeding the brain as an organ in a good way, particularly, I say, if you're looking after your nutrition as best you can. And the brain's an organ, and if you don't look after the brain, then that can affect things as well. You know, I think we need to respect the fact that it's an organ that needs us to do the right things for it as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's like a computer as well. What you put in, you're going to get out. So if I'm constantly receiving negativity, that's what's going to come out of me. So like you said, I have to do times where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to look at social media today. And in fact, when I kind of got rid of, but I stopped going on it as much, a big change in my mental health when I did that. And, you know, getting rid of some news apps, it's what you feed is what, you know, it's like that wolf saying, you know, you got the jealous wolf or the joyful wolf. It's which one you feed inside of you, which is going to go on and change your life, whether that be negatively or badly. And I think when you become aware of what triggers you for a lower mood, you can then choose to eliminate that from your life. And I think it's really, really important for us to kind of diagnose those things that we know pull us down and could take them out of our life, and have the self-discipline to ensure that we're doing it as well. Self-discipline, I think, is quite an important
thing. No, it's true. I mean, it's recognizing that we're being programmed, or allow ourselves to be programmed all the time, whether that's social media, reading a magazine, on the news, whatever it is, you know, even the people that we choose to spend time with and listen to. And again, I think the most important thing sometimes is, you know, you can have friends, you can have family and what have you, and you don't necessarily, I think, again, a conscious choice is, I don't have to take that opinion on board. I don't, you know, you can respect people's views, but I don't have to take that on board myself. So I think it's been more selective in what you allow in, really. And the news is, I mean, at the end of the day, I was talking right at the beginning about survival instinct and what have you. The news and the media play on that big time, you know,
massively.
Papers. They're not there to inform you. They're there to raise your emotional state and create fear and what have you. And I think it's really irresponsible at times, really, but a lot of the time, actually. Yeah. And so I think, but then we have a choice. I've got sucked into the news a little bit of late with the whole Boris Johnson resigning and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, same.
And I need to get away from it again, you know, for a while. It can sort of drag you in. You get interested for a bit. And I mean, there's been great stuff on the news with the lionesses and, you know, William the Euros, all that kind of thing. But again, it's a shame, actually, that the news outlets don't do more to talk about the good stuff that's going on rather than
fear. On the bad. Yeah, I think fear is the easier way to control a nation. If you put people in fear, they're easier to control. Yeah. And I feel like that's a whole nother subject.
It's easier to make money from fear as well.
Exactly. It is. And again, it's recognizing that it's really easy to trigger it in people.
Yeah.
So as you suggest, from a control perspective or an influence perspective, people know this. They know that we get triggered through fear and anxiety and threat and what have you really easily. And so that's really irresponsible, I think, that they choose to do that. But yeah, as you say, it's such an easy thing to do. And again, we need to, that's why I think, going back to your word awareness, for me, it's being aware that you're being triggered. And then for a moment you think, okay, I see what's going on here, and being able to either pull back from that or making a choice to think differently. Awareness is so powerful.
Thanks to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
We'd like to say a special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, and Poppel for our jingle and raspberry.